Moncrief on News Talk.
087-1400-106 is our WhatsApp number. It is indeed time for parenting. We are joined once again by Joanna Fortune. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right, here's your first question. I'm trying to foster a stronger relationship with my partner's two young children from his previous relationship. They are 9 and 6. I'm trying not to force things, but we haven't yet formed a strong bond. And my partner and I have been together for 2 years. What would you suggest about how I can start to create a more parental dynamic with them?
I mean, I think so much in this letter is so admirable. You know, in blended families, second relationships, whatever way you want to describe it, children really benefit from having as many caring, loving caregivers, for what, you know, as possible in their lives. And I there's something in this, Sean, that just brings up a question for me about what does the writer mean by a strong bond? And then it's a parental dynamic. So I suppose I'm curious as to what the fantasy is here. And I also had a question about how you might get on with their mother, for example, because I think for children to really understand the role of all of their important caregivers, they have to see that those important caregivers have a role and a connection with each other as well. So if you want, if you're listening and thinking, well, I have a, you know, cordial or civil enough connection, maybe that's a part of the relationship you might want to invest in or foster in terms of investing in these children as well. Ultimately, children trust safe, reliable and consistent adults. That's what they need. And children this age are still, you know, at a very egocentric stage of development. They want to know, how does everybody take care of me? That's really what it comes down to. So I would focus on being consistent with them. Be excited to see them. Talk about things that you saw or read during the week that made you think of them, because that teaches them that you hold them in mind even when they're not with you. You know, learn their preferred meals, snacks, provide those, and ultimately play with them. And maybe focus on having a little tradition that is your own with them. So that could be, you know, when they come over, you share a preferred snack and you play a board game together. And family board game night is the thing that you do with them when they're staying with you and their father. So I think it's about really starting a relationship that's yours with them rather than seeing yourself as another parent. That could evolve that parental connection. But I think they just need to understand who you are in their life and really value you in that role.
Yeah.
So there was a few layers to it, but I think ultimately and fundamentally the intention is so good here, and to want a close relationship with your partner's children is something that should be encouraged.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I would get from this, and if I'm wrong, that, you know, this person wants some sort of quasi-parental role or a parental role. Is it like for a child, are they able to kind of, apart from, you know, if it's mommy and daddy, to then make room for another person who they regard as a parent?
I mean, they can make room for another person, but I suppose what you have to be really careful about is that the children don't perceive that you're trying to replace a parent or you're trying to subsume that role of parent, because they have a mom and a dad and they're not looking for another mom, but they would welcome another caregiver, another adult in their life who loves them as much as their mom and dad does. That, I think, is what should be pursued here. But I think if children are very loyal to their parents, and if they were to perceive, oh, you're trying to be our mom right now, that's going to be a strain. Instead of saying, I'm absolutely not trying to be your mom, I'm trying to be another important person in your life because I love you, I care about you, and I want a connection with you.
My husband and I are looking at moving abroad, as financially it would be a better decision for us. However, our 8-year-old keeps throwing tantrums whenever the idea is mooted. She says she won't have any friends over there and likes where we are and being close to her grandparents. How do I get her accustomed or on board with the idea when she's so set against it? Oh, gosh.
I mean, look, we have to be really careful, Sean, when the question is around expecting our children to, or even quietly insisting that our children are happy with decisions that we make on their behalf. They don't owe us that approval. I think it would be lovely if they'd give it, by the way. Of course it would. It would make all of these stressful decisions easier. But your 8-year-old doesn't owe you a high five about this idea. She is allowed to question it, to oppose it, to, you know, be outright against it. She's allowed to do that. And it doesn't mean it's not going to happen, because this is a decision that affects the whole family. And that's not within the scope of an 8-year-old's decision making. That's for the grown-ups in the family. This is reading now, bearing in mind we have a snippet of a story, but this is reading as though you are still at the exploratory stage of this decision and you haven't actually made it. So I would be sort of suggesting to you that you decrease the discussion around her until you have a plan. And that doesn't mean until it's a fait accompli and it's all agreed, but that you're, you know, when you say going abroad, what does that mean? Are you going to another English speaking country? Is there going to be a language challenge for her? Where is it? Have you done any investigative work as to where you're going to live, where she will go to school? Those are the questions that that the answers to which would really reassure children in this kind of decision making. And I'm also thinking, you know, when she says, I won't have any friends over there, I like where we are, I want to be close to my grandparents. Of course she feels like this. But I'm also betting that as parents, you empathize with that and you relate to it, which could make it even harder to hear it from her as well. So you're also thinking, well, I wish we could stay here with friends and grandparents, and I wish we could, but it's not financially viable. An 8-year-old doesn't have an appreciation for financial viability of decision making. They're very adult decisions. So I would say, look, you floated it with her. You're aware it's something she's likely to struggle with. But if you know, and it sounds like you do, that this is the best decision for you as a family, then as the adults in the family, you go and pursue this, you do all of the investigation and the planning, and you come to her with a plan where when she hits you with questions, you've got some degree of answer for her. And then you look at what supports is she going to need in that transition, and exploring creative ways that you can maintain contact with friends and family in the area. Whatever hobbies and interests, Sean, like specifically she's into now, have identified somewhere she can pick those up when she moves, wherever you're going to. So there are really practical things you can do, but it just feels like this is a little bit away from that stage because you don't yet know where you're going, when or to what.
Because, yeah, I suppose maybe they were home to gradually ease her into the decision and get her even maybe a little bit enthused about it. But
I just think she needs more details and a little bit more certainty before you can access anything even resembling enthusiasm.
Yes.
Because kids love certainty. Like, they don't love the sure we'll see. Like, they do not love that. So I would think that, look, make the decision. And as a family, know this is happening.
Yeah.
And now you're bringing something to her and you're bringing her on board with the decision, because right now it's a contemplation, or certainly sounding like that. And so she is able to say, no, we're not going, because at the moment you're not actually going anywhere. So wait until there's a plan, but come at it through the eyes of an 8-year-old. Have done the investigative work to the school, the area, the dance class, the football team, whatever she's into. Have done all of that and have answers to her questions. And do look at creative ways that grandparents will visit. You will return home for visits. You will maintain video phone contact. Look at ways that she can stay connected even when you move. But don't expect her to be delighted about it. She might not be.
And just going back to that question about the blended family situation through friends, says this texter, I've seen this work really well and also be a disaster. It should all be centred around the children. You can't force them to be comfortable with a new parent, they put that in inverted commas, coming into their lives. The family I saw it work best with was the one where the new adult came in just as a cool, friendly addition to the family, not someone who was trying to assert authority or a bond.
Yeah, I think it's about a playful connection, and connection is something you can pursue without taking that parental role.
My parents separated in the 1990s because my father was having an affair. That relationship lasts to this day, but the damage to us as children lives on as well. His new partner, now wife, treated us as a nuisance and used to openly tell us we were interrupting her weekend when it was our turn to be there. She used to cuddle my dad on the couch during Saturday night movies, which meant we couldn't. Something that made us so sad as kids. So fair play to this person for wanting to try and build a strong bond with them. God, that sounds absolutely horrendous. Really. Right. My baby is 9 months old and is being extremely clingy with me. So much so that she doesn't want to go to her dad or anyone else. We have tried just involving her dad for her bath time routine, for example, but she gets so fussy that it's easier just to give in and have me there. What else could we try?
Okay, so this is another one that I'm just going to open with a no initially to, because 9-month-olds are not clingy to us as parents. 9-month-olds are still very much developing their attachment to key caregivers. They're very much evolving in their understanding of themselves in a very big world. And as part of that, what we see is that babies this age, they lean into us as parents. And when children know they can lean into us, they learn how to ultimately stand on their own 2 feet in the world. So this is not about your baby being clingy. This is developmentally very typical, healthy, normal behavior. And what I would just maybe read in between the lines of this is that the constancy of demand in early years parenting can be so exhausting on parents. So ensure that you're resourcing yourself, because there's something about, God, I just want dad to be able to do these things so it's not all me. I totally get that. That's completely relatable. And keep doing that. Just because a baby is showing preferential treatment to one parent over another doesn't mean the other parent steps off completely. Still be there and encourage that connection, because that preferential treatment between parents, and we've talked about this before in other questions, that changes as the child grows. They'll show preference to one parent at one stage and it will shift to the other. And we as parents have to be able to adapt with that. But I think ultimately this isn't about a clingy baby. This is about a baby doing exactly what the baby's supposed to be doing. There is a lovely little book, Sean, that's coming to my mind now called You Are My World, and it's by Amy Hatkoff, Hatkoff. And it's a lovely little book with beautiful images and little quotes that really kind of contextualize what I'm talking about here, how attachment is formed and developed for babies and how they lean into and depend on parents as a key part of that attachment development. It's also a visually lovely book. It's very accessible. So that might be a useful resource as well.
Yeah, right. My mother-in-law has suggested that we put my toddler on reins when we are out walking. I'm completely horrified by this idea, yet I've caught her doing it a number of times. It's like my son is on a dog leash. I know he doesn't understand road safety, but she doesn't see a problem with it and says it will help him. Where do we draw the line here? God, I don't know if you, I didn't know you could even get them anymore, but I do remember them. They were like, they were around the chest and.
Well, you can, but Sean, like, they don't resemble anything like what I remember seeing. And if I remember it, it must have been with one of my younger siblings that my parents might have used. They don't look anything like that. So, I mean, there were so many child-friendly toddler reins. You know, they're like little backpacks they wear and you can put their beakers and nappies and bits in it. And it's attached to something that goes around your arm. You can even wear that under a coat. You can also get these kind of dinosaur and unicorn branded harnesses that kids are quite excited to wear. I just find in this day and age, with so many modern alternatives out there, the comparison to a dog leash just feels a little dated and dramatic, to be honest, because I think what, and anyone parenting a toddler who's prone to being a runner, you know them. I mean, if you have one, you don't even have to hesitate. The fear, especially if you live in a built up or urban area, or to be honest, any area with roads, a toddler is so unpredictable by nature. And when they're prone to this and you're shouting after them to stop, so some of them just find that part of the game. They now think you're playing chasing. Yes. So they run faster and keep going. And that's okay if you're a young, fit, healthy parent who's able to outrun said toddler and catch them and you're confident that you can. But if I'm granny, I might be anxious that something's going to happen to this little kid on my watch. Mm. And I need to safeguard this child because I love him just as much as his parents love him. And that's, I think, where you've got to get back to with this. There's something that I'm horrified. I've caught her. He's on a dog leash. Like, this is very divisive language. You all love this child. You all want the best for him. Lucky little kid that he is to have you all. I just think if you don't want to use a child harness, then don't. But be aware of how you can run after your son. Be aware of how you can manage it and maybe approach this in a more empathic rather than judgment way with granny and say, look, I realize he's a handful. He's fast. He loves to run. You know, every time you run after him, he just thinks it's chasing. We get it. Here's what we find works, and share whatever it is you do that works. And if you're listening, go, no, we just run after him. That's what happens. Then I think you need to shift a gear and say, when he's in the care of granny, and you're so lucky that you have granny there, by the way, to help and to care for him and want to spend time with him, maybe you get a child-friendly backpack harness and it's dinosaurs on it, and it has it, you know, it's not like the old school ones that had this like really long leash, and it, you know, the child could run a certain way and then you'd pull them back. Like, this is much nicer. So maybe look around. There isn't a shop selling baby stuff out there that doesn't have one of these. Find one that you can tolerate, if not be thrilled about, if it is going to alleviate Granny's worry and enable her to keep minding and playing with him while he's at this really busy stage. It's a short enough window before they do learn a degree of road safety, and you can instill that in him. So I would just put this in the category of, is this a parental essential or is this a parental preference? But try not to be so dramatic in how you speak to it about her, because it could make her feel like she's doing something wrong when it sounds to me like she's desperately trying to do something very right.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, there's loads of those options with backpacks. And I assume like a toddler isn't going to be damaged by this or anything. On how you use it, of course.
Fine, really. But no, of course not. And especially when you put it on and it's playful, and it means often it's a signifier that you're going out. It can be a convenient place to put a few bits, your wallet, their bottle, you know, a few, their nappy, whatever it is in the back. And you go off for a walk and you hold their hand while wearing it. It's only there if they make a run for it. It's not like you're holding them as if you're walking the child. You're walking with them as if you would any other time, holding their hand and singing and doing whatever it is you do on your walk. It's there if they impulsively run.
Yeah.
And you're not able to get hold of them with your hand. It's really a safety mechanism. And not all children need them. Not all families like them. But I think if it comes down to it being a deal breaker with Granny being able to take him out, I would pick my battles on that one.
A couple of comments on that. I do the same with my grandson. And even though I know my son doesn't like it, I tell him it's the only way I'll mind him out in public. I'm not able to keep up with him.
100%.
So he has to stay close to me. And the gas thing is, he never complains about it. He loves being with me in the supermarket or walking to the playground. And he knows that wearing his straps is what allows that to happen. Kids get on with things. It's the parents who are the problem. Lynn says, my youngest child, now aged 20, was a runner. So with four kids under six, I had to keep him safe and used reins. He barked every time I put them on him, much to our amusement. So there you go. It also provided a good family story. Also on the question of someone moving abroad and the little one not being keen about it. I moved to Spain from New York 2 years ago. Kids were not happy. But after a year or so, they were nearly fluent in Spanish and made lots of friends. Plus, they can go out at night in Spain, not so much in New York. So there you go. There's advantages depending on where we're going in the country. Plus, also, a lot of people, Joanne, getting in contact saying how mean and terrible we are, making you go on the radio when you're obviously at death's door.
I'm so sorry. I thought I was really getting through that with my glass of flat 7 up here.
Yes. No, you heroic efforts that time. Get well, Joanna. Thanks a million as
ever. Thank you so much, everyone.
That was Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.